I think that we that since we continue to be thin this week, that we'll do what we did last week and have more of a discussion when we go through the passage that we're looking at. And we are eventually going to land at 1 Samuel chapter 5 and 6. But there's one or two other places I wanted to land first. Where was the ark up to this point? Where is it located?
Shiloh.
Shiloh. You don't hear much about Shiloh after this. And in fact, where we see where the ark winds up, it's not going to wind up back at Shiloh. Turn with me to, I'm looking, I got a couple places. I don't want to go to all of them. Jeremiah chapter 7. Jeremiah chapter 7. This is long after this. A few hundred years after this, in fact. And you don't see this in 1 Samuel. But this was another time when the people were falling into idolatry. And they were trusting in, at that point, the temple. Jeremiah 7, chapter 1. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, "Stand in the gate of the Lord's house, and proclaim there this word, and say, Hear the word of the Lord, all you of Judah, who enter by these gates to worship the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Amend your ways and your deeds, and I will let you dwell in this place. Do not trust in deceptive words, saying, This is the temple of the Lord. The temple of the Lord! The temple of the Lord! For if you truly amend your ways and your deeds, if you truly practice justice between a man and his neighbor, if you do not oppress the alien, the orphan, or the widow, and do not shed innocent blood in this place, nor walk after other gods to your own ruin, then I will let you dwell in this place, in the land that I gave to your fathers forever and ever. Behold, you are trusting in deceptive words, no avail. Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and offer sacrifices to Baal, and walk after other gods that you have not known? Then come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, We are delivered, that you may do all these abominations. Has this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your sight? Behold, I have seen it, declares the Lord. But now go to my place, which was in Shiloh, where I made my name dwell at the first, and see what I did to it, because of the wickedness of my people, Israel. And now, because you have done all these things, declares the Lord, and I spoke to you, rising up early and speaking, but you did not hear, and I called you, but you did not answer. Therefore I will do to the house which is called by my name, in which you trust, and to the place which I gave you and your fathers, as I did to Shiloh. I will cast you out of my sight, as I have cast out all your brothers, all the offspring of Ephraim." Okay, so what does it say that God did to Shiloh? Yeah, he basically bulldozed it. We don't get that sense from 1 Samuel. It's almost like that's the meanwhile between chapter 4 and the end of chapter 6. Because in chapter 4, they came to Eli, who is presumably still in Shiloh, and said that the ark had been taken and your sons had fallen. He fell over dead. You don't hear any more of Shiloh. Chances are that the battle continued to go badly. Israel was on the run from the Philistines, and Shiloh was not that far from the front lines. So chances are, as the battle expanded, the Philistines said, We've got the goods, we've got the ark. Now let's tear down their temple or their tabernacles. So they took that down too, and they obliterated it. What's Jeremiah, the passage in Jeremiah, trying to say to us nowadays?
Don't depend on church regularly and right. perfect attendance and
whatever. Don't depend on externals, because it's not externals that God cares about. How about for our country as a whole? Any lessons there? I read this and I think of us coasting, that all this God bless America, you know, all the chest thumping that we've seen over the last 10 years, you know, God bless America. But
he did,
right? If God will bless America when America walks obediently to him, just like every other country in the history of the world. If you follow God, God will bless you. If you don't, you take your chances.
I'm not sure if coasting.
Well, yeah, it's like an airplane that's got all of its engines out, and it's flying, but it's losing the altitude, so without those engines starting up, the end is inevitable. So kind of bear that in mind, that the phrase I heard is, God has no grandchildren. He has children, but he has no grandchildren. Right, that you can't rest on the laurels of the people before you. I am faithful church members. So God will protect us no matter what we do. Yeah, you can be faithful churchgoers who have a genuine allegiance to God and a genuine salvation in Yeshua. Or you can be somebody who goes to church as one of the things in your life, and you follow God as one of the tickets in your wallet, but as far as the way you live your life, it's just you don't have that allegiance, that trust in Yeshua, that you're just playing around. You're just doing pleasant things with pleasant people, singing pleasant songs in a nice, comfortable place. It's worse in the Jewish community. I mean, it's bad enough in the church community, but in the Jewish community, it's like, you know, it's become a cliche tradition, but why are you doing what you're doing? Because this is the way we've always done it. Well, what do you think about God? Oh, I don't believe in God, but I just do this stuff because I'm a Jew, and that's what Jews do. So it's even worse there. Surveys of the Jewish community reveal that more than a slight majority last time it was surveyed, it's probably worse now, a slight majority in the Jewish who identify themselves as Jewish don't believe in God at all. And as far as believing in that the Bible is true, the Scriptures is true, the proportion is probably much higher. Because you get around the Passover time and you ask people to explain to you the meaning of Passover, and they'll say, well, it's a bunch of myths and fairy tales that have been passed down to us that we do at this time of year because it's our tradition. So it's worse there, but we all have to watch that idea of gliding on empty down into the pit. One more thing that I wanted to look at before we rested, I should have brought this up last week to put the God's curse on Eli to rest, because Eli's two oldest sons were killed in a single day, but he apparently, well, there was his daughter-in-law who gave birth, so there are other descendants of Eli. So turn with me to 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings chapter 2. Down to verse 27. Just a quickie. So Solomon dismissed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord in order to fulfill the word of the Lord which he had spoken concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. And he dismissed Abiathar because he had cooperated with the rebellion of Adonijah against Solomon's reign. So this was, I think, Let's see, let me be into footnotes here. Because Adonijah, or I'm sorry, Abiathar was, I'm trying to figure out if he's the grandson or great-grandson.
But he must have been a descendant of Eli.
He was definitely a descendant of Eli. But as to his relationship to Eli, okay. Now I don't got it, but anyway, he was in his line, and there's a long discussion, as commentators love to do, bringing in learned authorities of various sorts to try to determine what his relationship to Eli was. But he was one of his descendants. So that kind of wraps up God's curse. Because remember, the curse was not only that Eli's sons would perish in a single day, but that none of his descendants would be priests. And it took a couple of generations for that to come about. But it finally did work itself out that Solomon dismissed Abiathar, and that was it. That was the last of Eli's descendants who had a shot at the priesthood. All right, so back to 1 Samuel chapter 5. Yes, Karen. Ahimelech, that was from that passage. Whereabouts? Where are you? You're in the
1 Samuel 22:20.
So it's 1 Samuel 22:20.
Is this one of these things where Abiathar's common name and put them to the other?
No, that's the same guy. Because he was with David. Ahimelech. Ahimelech, I think, died. No. And a son of Ahimelech. Yeah, okay. There it is. He too. But in verse 22. Okay. One son of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. Okay, so Abiathar was the son of Ahimelech. And Ahimelech was the son of Ahitub. And Ahitub was the son of, who knows? Okay, here we go. It's in 1 Samuel 14:3. So Ahitub was Ichabod's brother, so he was already alive when Phinehas died. So we had Eli to Phinehas to Ahitub to Ahimelech to Abiathar. So we had the son of Eli was Phinehas, grandson was Ahitub, the great-grandson of Eli was Ahimelech, So that would have made Abiathar the great-great-grandson of Eli. So, the answer. Okay. All right, 1 Samuel chapter 5. So at this point, the ark was taken, Shiloh is destroyed, and it belongs in the hands of the it is in the possession of the Philistines. So if you were Philistines and you captured one of your neighbor's gods as you destroyed there, as you won a great victory, what would you do with their god? No, you would take it and you would put it in your temple. Put it as a trophy, more or less, to what your god did. It's like, my god had victory over this other god. First Samuel chapter 5, verse 1. Now the Philistines took the ark of God and brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. Ashdod is one of their capitals. The Philistines took the ark of God and brought it to the house of Dagon and set it by Dagon, which was their god. Some archaeologists have discovered some statues among the Philistines, and Dagon may have been a creature that has a human head, the tusks of a walrus, and a fishy bottom to the body. So that may have been Dagon. Scholars think that was probably Dagon. So they took the ark and the house of Dagon, and set it by Dagon. Verse 30, when the Ashdodites rose early the next morning, behold, Dagon had fallen on his face to the ground before the ark of the Lord. So they took Dagon and set him in his place again. So I enjoy this. It's like God just making a point. Just in the morning, they bought the ark of God as a testimony to the power of their god, and they wake up in the morning and their god is bowing down to the ark of God. It also says something about the power of their god, not that it fell on its silly face and somebody had to pick it up and put it back on the shelf. Verse 4. But when they rose early the next morning, behold, Dagon had fallen on his face to the ground before the ark of the Lord. And the head of Dagon and both the palms of his hands were cut off on the threshold. Only the trunk of Dagon was left to him. So, first time, it just fell on its face. Second time, it fell on the face and broke. The head and the hands broke off. Because the Dagon, the god, some of the statues they found had the hands raised. So it would make sense that they broke off. Verse 5, therefore neither the priests of Dagon nor all who enter Dagon's house tread on the threshold of Dagon and Ashdod to this day. So they didn't get the point, right? They got the wrong point. It's like, let's stop and think. If your god is so powerless that it fell on its face and broke, maybe you should consider changing gods. Maybe, just maybe. All right, verse 6, now the hand of the Lord was heavy on the Ashdodites, and he ravaged them and smote them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territories. And if Ashdod saw that it was so, they said, the ark of the God of Israel must not remain with us, for his hand is severe on us and on Dagon, our god.
You're starting to get the point
that we got to get this thing out of here. But they still aren't quite there yet. They're thinking, well, we just got to get this out of our city. So there starts this hot potato kind of thing with the ark of God. It's like, we don't want it. So they take it to the next city. And the next city will say, I don't want it either. Verse 8, they sent and gathered all the lords of the Philistines to them and said, what shall we do with the ark of the God of Israel? And they said, let the ark of the God of Israel be brought around to Gath. They brought the ark of the God of Israel around. They figured, well, maybe it was just a coincidence. All right, all these things happen. Let's take it to Gath. Maybe this won't happen in Gath. After they had brought it around, the hand of the Lord was against the city with very great confusion, and he smote the men of the city, both young and old, so that tumors broke out on them. So they sent the ark of God to Ekron, And as the Ark of God came to Ekron, the Ekronites cried out, saying, "They have brought the Ark of the God of Israel around to us to kill us and our people." So he's like, "No, we don't want it. Take it away. Take it somewhere else." Verse 11, "They sent, therefore, and gathered all the lords of the Philistines and said, 'Send away the Ark of the God of Israel and let it return to its own place, so that it will not kill us and our people.' There was a deadly confusion throughout the city. The hand of God was very heavy there. And the men who did not die were smitten with tumors, and the cry of the city went up to heaven." So it was deeper than this, because not only were they smitten with tumors, people were dying. Here the Ark of God went, people died. They said, "Whoa, get this thing out of here." Chapter 6. Now the Ark of the Lord had been in the country of the Philistines 7 months. The Philistines called for the priests and the diviners, saying, "What shall we do with the Ark of the Lord? Tell us how we shall send it to its place." And these guys actually were pretty smart. And they said, "If you send away the Ark of the God of Israel, do not send it empty, but you shall return to him a guilt offering. Then you will be healed, and it will be known to you why his hand is not removed from you." Then they said, What shall be the guilt offering which we shall return to him?" And they said, 5 golden tumors and 5 golden mice, according to the number of the lords of the Philistines. For one plague was on all of you and on your lords." Scripture doesn't really say how the mice fit into this, where the mice came from, but somehow mice are involved with this. Verse 5 says, "So you shall make likenesses of your tumors and likenesses of your mice that ravage the land. You shall give glory to the God of Israel. Perhaps he will ease his hand from you, your gods, and your land." "Why then do you harden your hearts as the Egyptians and Pharaoh hardened their hearts? When he had severely dealt with them, did they not allow the people to go, and they departed? Now therefore take and prepare a new cart and 2 milk cows on which there has never been a yoke, and hitch the cows to the cart and take their calves home away from them." So what would have been the natural course of the cows?
Calves.
Yeah, they follow the calves. You don't mess with mama and her calves. Right? So they're going to take these cows in a cart, make up the cart, hitch the cows to it. Verse 8, "Take the Ark of the Lord and place it on the cart. Put the articles of gold, which you would return to him as a guilt offering, in a box by its side. Then send it away that it may go. Watch if it goes up by the way of its own territory to Beth Shemesh, when he has done us this great evil. But if not, then we will know that it was not his hand that struck us. It happened to us by chance. It was a coincidence." Just a coincidence. And everywhere you took the ark, people died and got sick. That Dagon would fall, it would all be a coincidence. Yeah, right. Verse 10, "Then the men did so and took 2 milk cows and hitched them to the cart and shut up their calves at home. They put the Ark of the Lord on the cart, the box with the golden mice and the likenesses of their tumors. And the cows took the straight way in the direction of Beth Shemesh. They went along the highway, lowing as they went, and did not turn aside to the right or to the left. And the lords of the Philistines followed them to the border of Beth Shemesh." So the cows did not waver. A beeline or cow line straight to Beth Shemesh. And the Philistines were not leading the cows, but following them. So it was wherever the cows would go. So God took the cows back home. Now the people of Beth Shemesh were reaping their wheat harvest in the valley. They raised their eyes and saw the ark and were glad to see it. Imagine that picture. They're there reaping their stuff in the field, and they look up and here comes this cart with 2 cows carrying the ark. So the cart must have been open so that they could see this thing coming along the road. with nobody around, just these two cows carrying the ark back into town, or into the farm. Verse 14, the cart came into the field of Joshua the Beth Shemite, and stood there where there was a large stone. And they split the wood of the cart and offered the cows as a burnt offering to the Lord. So the cows' successful enterprise was short-lived. Verse 15, the Levites took down the ark of the Lord and the box that was with it, which were the articles of gold, put them on the large stone, and the men of Beth Shemesh offered burnt offerings and sacrifices that day to the Lord. The five lords of the Philistines saw it. They returned to Ekron that day. These are the golden tumors which the Philistines returned for a guilt offering to the Lord, one for Ashdod, one for Gaza, one for Ashkelon, one for Gath, one for Ekron, and the golden mice, according to the number of all the cities of the Philistines belonging to the five lords, both of fortified cities and of country villages. The large stone on which they set the ark of the Lord is a witness to this day in the field of Joshua the Beth Shemite. Now, what happened next is kind of a mystery. Once again, different commentators argue about it. They argue about lots of things. Verse 19, he struck down some of the men of Beth Shemesh because they had looked into the ark of the Lord. He struck down all the people, 50,070 men, and people mourned because the Lord had struck the people with a great slaughter. Men of Beth Shemesh said, who is able to stand before the Lord, this holy God? And to whom shall he go up from us? Sent messengers to the inhabitants of Kiriath Jearim, saying, the Philistines have brought back the ark of the Lord. Come down and take it up to you. Well, I say it's a mystery, is it's not sure what in the world they did. It is unlikely that they would have actually popped the top of the ark and looked in, although it's possible. I mean, that was something that would have been so horrendous to them. I doubt that they would have thought to do that, especially since the Levites are there. It says that they looked into it, but there is some issues with the language that is involved in there in verse 19, whether it is in or at. So that is the question, and let me look at the Hebrew here.
Into it, they would have touched it.
Right, and that would have been, they would have died instantly.
Might have touched it.
Yes, so they would have died immediately. And so this says they looked. It could have been in or on. It could have been in or upon. That's why some people, commentators say in or, because it's, the Hebrew is ambiguous there. And that's why some people they looked in or on. In or on. So there's a couple of issues with that verse, and that's one of them, one of the mysteries. It could also mean a foolish staring at as well as into. That's why commentators. The into is a Jewish tradition. It may or may not have been what was going on, because like I said, it's, to me it would have been very unlikely that the Levites would have just walked up to it and opened up the lid and taken a look. I mean, yeah, it's possible because they found this box of golden stuff next to it, so they might have opened it up to see if there was any more in there. So that's one possibility. The other mystery about this verse is the 50,000 and 70 men. The construction of the Hebrew there on the 50,000 and 70 is odd, and even some of the Jewish scholars say it's 70 men out of 1,000 rather than 50,000 and 70, because the problem with the 50,000 and 70 is at that time there weren't 50,000 men all living around Beth Shemesh. Beth Shemesh is a relatively small village, so maybe 1,000 or 2,000 people to get 50,000 people there, more than 50,000 people for God to strike them down, seems a little weird. So that's one of the few places where there might very well have been a copyist error, only because the number is not formed like a Hebrew number ought to be. So that's why. Or it could have meant something that we're not understanding. It could have been an idiom of Hebrew that we don't understand, is another possibility. And so putting it as best we can as 50,070, because I think Josephus said 70 inhabitants. And it could mean 70 out of 1,000. So so it's just very, very forced to try to deal with it. And it could have been 50 out of 1,000 or 70 out of 1,000 is one other possibility that it could have been, or 70 out of 1,400, as Josephus says, or 70 out of 1,500. You have only a couple letters misplaced could make turn that into this conglomeration that we have here. But in any case, God punished them for what they did, that they were not treating the ark with any reverence. So why did God let the Philistines load it onto a cart and let it go be carried by cows?
Why didn't he kill them when he touched it?
Right. Why didn't they kill them when he touched it? It's, I think, that the Jewish people knew better. They knew better not to touch it. Whereas the Philistines, God gave them some, cut them some slack. Now, Kiriath Jearim, it was interesting that that is, that particular town belonged to the descendants of Caleb. That was part of his inheritance. And when David brings up the ark to Jerusalem in 1 Chronicles 13, he brings it up from Kiriath Jearim. So the ark remained there until David took it up to Jerusalem. Of course, what was David's mistake when he brought it up? I guess he figured it worked for the Philistines. Look at how much faster we'll get to Jerusalem if we do it that way. And somebody died. Somebody died because he touched it. Yeah.
Wasn't there a cover over the ark? They were going through the wilderness because they had
That's true.
Skin cover.
They were supposed to have put all that on it in order for it to
carry. It was supposed to be carried by Levite.
Right.
So it was visible, except that it was covered by that cover.
Yeah, I was going to say that, because at this time, once they had the tabernacle set up, it was in the Holy of Holies, right? And once it was in the Holy of Holies, nobody saw it but the high priest.
Right.
So,
well, yeah, in the tabernacle.
And that was the way the Lord required them to set all that up.
Yes.
He didn't want it to be in the eyesight of
No, you don't want to be sitting out on a rock.
So when the people just cast their eyes on the thing, that was...
That's true.
Sure, yep. One of the holy
that kind of shows the holiness of God. And his stuff.
And that's why they had it and they covered it like you're describing, because when they traveled, they had to carry that, but people still couldn't see it. All they could see was a covering over it.
Yes.
And the Levites didn't even touch it, but with mm-hmm. carried with the poles.
Right. They shall take it in Numbers chapter 4, verse 5, when the camp sets out, Aaron and his son shall go in, and they shall take down the veil of the screen and cover the Ark of the Testimony with it. So you weren't supposed to look upon it, even on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. The high priest was supposed to fill the room with incense, that he couldn't look on the presence of God above the Ark. So the fact they had it just sitting out there on a rock, yeah, that was a problem too. Okay. So a couple of things here. God certainly worked things out. He put judgment on the Philistines, but in such a way that they would realize that He is God. And He proved Himself to be God. Every test they put before Him, He passed with flying colors to demonstrate to them that it wasn't just chance. It's also interesting to see that people nowadays do that same thing. It's just coincidence. Oh, it wasn't God, it was just coincidence. It wasn't a miracle, it was just coincidence. That cancer would have gotten better anyway. Or I just happened to run into somebody, and even if I hadn't have prayed about it, it would have happened. You know, people say that nowadays. But I don't know what it would take to convince people. Hopefully not boils and mice to convince people of the reality of God. But it he certainly makes His presence known. And so the Ark itself is going to... It's sort of interesting because and actually let's read two verses into chapter 7. I just happened to notice this. And the men of Kiriath-Jearim came and took the Ark of the Lord and brought it into the house of Abinadab on the hill and consecrated Eleazar his son to keep the Ark of the Lord. The day that the Ark remained at Kiriath-Jearim, the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. Okay, so it seems like the Ark was in exile, sort of. It's certainly some mysterious things going on there, because although the Ark was back in Israel, it doesn't seem like the whole worship was reinstated. It doesn't seem like the priests were doing their bit. It seemed like the Ark was just there in his field.
In the house. Not understanding exactly how she came in,
yeah.
And what all that happened to the Philistines, whether they heard or not. And what happened to the men there in Kiriath-Jearim, they said, let's just leave her alone.
Yes. Yes, let's not mess with it. Because the tabernacle didn't go with the Ark. I saw on the internet that the Ark itself, or the tabernacle itself, wound up in a different place. It wound up going south from Shiloh and wound up somewhere nearby. So it gets very, very strange, because then we see Samuel doing some sacrificing later on, but he doesn't seem to be doing it at Kiriath-Jearim around the Ark. So you kind of scratch your head and say, okay, I wonder what just happened here. And we don't have all the information, but still, there were consequences for their unbelief, which is kind of what's going on here. And we'll see that as we go further on into 1 Samuel chapter 7, we'll see Samuel chiding them for the real bottom line here is that they... We're not trusting God, they're trusting in idols. That's all these things are.